am special guest
William Harry's Graham.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Power Motion Picnic Hour. As always, I'm your host Dave, and as always, alongside me also your host is
Trevor.
Trevor, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dave?
I'm good. Yeah, doing good. Trying to stay cool. It's hot here in New York.
It's been a hot summer, hasn't it?
The hottest of the seasons.
Yeah.
And that's the hottest topic that we talk about in terms of popularity, the season rating. And
seasons. Yeah, even more popular than tunings.
Yeah, alternate tunings. Super hyper alternate tunings.
Alternate stringing.
It's going to be 100 degrees in New York tomorrow.
As someone who is just in the desert, I got to say the humidity really does make a difference too.
It feels
like a lot worse out here.
Yeah. What is this crap?
Yeah. But yeah, loved the great chat we had with another lovely special guest.
Yeah, we had a great special guest, great talk with William Harry's Graham, joining our illustrious Mount Rushmore of Austin, Texas guests. That Mount Rushmore might have 8 heads on it by now.
Yep.
But as Matt Farley would say, the quantity breeds quality.
Yeah, as always. But yeah, that was great, and I know we got a lot of big topics. So I don't know. Do you want to do a little bit now, a little bit when we get back from our interview?
Sure, let's do one topic and then we'll get to our interview, and then we'll talk about more topics on the other side.
All right. What do you want to do? What's your
Let's hear a little bit. I saw on the Strava, which I'm on now, that you did a big run out in the desert in Nevada.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I guess I did just allude to that. I ran in the Mojave Desert, which I don't know. There's not a lot to say about the run. I think it was nicely uneventful. I did have it in my mind that I was going to get like baked by the sun and dehydrated. Yeah. And then I don't know, about a third of the way in, I started thinking about snakes.
Yep.
I'm like, I really don't want to see a snake or accidentally step on a snake. But it all went very smoothly. I had it in my mind that I was going to have like a Jesse Chandler-esque like mishap where I ran out of water, and I did probably show up to the run unprepared, but thankfully they had a visitor center where I got some water and a goofy hat that blocked the sun, and feeling good.
That's all you need. How far did you run total?
I think it was about 7 miles total.
A lot of vert?
Not a lot. It was like a gradual uphill, and then I turned around and went back and went like a little bit further down. It was a little over maybe 1,000 feet or something.
That sounds awesome. That sounds really, and it looked cool in the photos. For, I don't know how many Strava followers you have, but for, let's say, for the 100,000 followers you have on Strava, it looked cool from where I was sitting.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, no, it was very cool, different, very different terrain than what I'm used to being from New Hampshire. I felt like the miles should count more or something. Such a different environment.
You got snakes in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah, but not like that.
No.
Not heat, sand, and I don't know, weird cacti, and
yeah.
It's like an entirely different terrain. Everything was like reddish orange.
I've never run out there. I got to do it. But I did have a weird fear of snakes period as a small kid, or maybe as like a 7-8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Where I would have snake dreams. I had dreams that like, and the dream would always end with some kind of a snake would pop up somehow. And then the snake would always get me and bite me. And I'd be like, ah, yeah. Then I'd wake up, but not like it would have gotten me in it. Maybe 5 seconds later I'd wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess Bobby Daniel had mentioned playing shows in Vegas, and rather than like go out and, you know,
yeah,
do Vegas things, he'd get up early and like head out to the desert and go for a run. And I think, I mean, where I was staying happened to be like right up against like the edge of town, like looking at the mountains. So I was like, all right, this feels a little bit, you know, more doable maybe than when you're further in.
Yeah.
But it was literally like a 10-minute Uber ride. And then I, on the way back out, called an Uber and somebody like, you know, I thought I might have to like try to hitch a ride with somebody, worst case, just get me to a place where I could call an Uber. But yeah, some Uber came out like 9 minutes, met me at the gate. Like it was super easy.
That rules.
Yeah. But you definitely feel like you get very remote very quickly. Like this, like Las Vegas, just at one point it just ends. There's like the last like little like row of like houses and like a development, and then it's just like desert from that point on. You can see how it's just been like developed just like a little bit further, like, but there's
Yeah.
not like sparse development after that. It just stops.
It's the edge of town.
Yeah.
Just the tumbling tumbleweeds. I haven't been to Nevada in, geez, I don't know, 3 years, so I got to make sure to do that next time I'm out there, 'cause I've never done that.
Recommend it. It was different.
All right, I'll do it. And well, that sounds wonderful. Thank you. We, as always, encourage all our guests to call in and share their stories about desert running or just hallucinating while running along a trail. If you don't know how to reach us, as always, just, tell Dave Rawlings and he'll pass the information along. And since we've already mentioned Dave Rawlings and three previous special guests from the Power Motion Picnic Hour, maybe it's finally time to go to our interview this week with William Harries Graham, and listen to a great talk about a little bit about running and a lot of other great stuff. And we'll connect back on the other side and talk about more recent events and milestones.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
My name is William Harries Graham. I'm a musician and designer and architect and a million other things, but deep down, I guess, like just an art lover and a lover of all things art and how that encompasses everything.
That's a
very nice introduction.
Yeah, I got a lot in there. I like that.
I find myself doing too many things always, so just got to get it out of the way sometimes.
You love a lot of life. Well, I guess we have to ask, since we are a running podcast, do you run?
I do run, actually. So it's kind of complicated. And it was something I was prepared for coming on the podcast, because I do my research. So I listened to a couple of episodes. And so when I was young, I was diagnosed with something called Legpirthes, which essentially is a deformation of your femur heads. So when I was really young, I really loved running as a kid. Like I was deeply into it. And for a very long period of time, when I was diagnosed and afterwards, I was not able to run at all, really, or do a lot of activities that kids were able to do. And then gradually over the last 5 or so years, I eased myself back into it a little bit. And it started off actually with rock climbing. I got really into rock climbing for a couple of years. And then I kind of dipped my toe back in. I'm not like a marathon runner like y'all or anything crazy. But I'm back to the point where I can do a couple miles and take some kind of walking breaks in the middle.
Nice.
But it's the best thing to clear your head or like start your day in the morning, etc. And one of my bass player, Bobby Daniel, is a huge, huge runner, and works at a running shoe store in Austin. So
awesome.
I talked to him a lot about it, and was able to, because I still have some arthritis and stuff from the stuff I had when I was a kid, and I got some cushy shoes, so now I'm able to
nice.
Do a little bit.
Did you hear the episode where we had Bobby on as a guest?
I have not yet, but I did see that you had him on.
Yeah, he was a great guy to talk to. We have a good Austin connection and Texas in general on this show. So
it's a good connection to have.
Yeah, well, it's a great place. So you live in Austin currently?
I do.
And you're from Austin.
Austin. I'm from Austin. I'm born and raised, one of the few who stuck around.
it's changed a lot.
It's changed a lot, and then in a lot of ways it's still the same. It's
Yeah.
there's a weird there's such a m mystique around Austin of it being this it's always like I heard this story originally from my dad, but I've heard it from a million people. But he moved here in the, I guess it would be mid-70s, mid to late
Oh,
70s.
cool.
And when he moved to Austin, his roommates, he was a student at UT, and they were like, "You just missed it. It was so cool 5 years ago." And I've heard the same story over and over again with so many friends of people just being like, "You just missed it." Like it was just, and honestly, I find myself sometimes saying it now to people who move here where I'm like,
Yeah.
dude, like the music scene here in like the late 2010s, it was just so much better than it is now. And it's just like, I think it's just a repeating cycle that'll like keep
Yeah.
going forever. I mean, it's different, but it's a weird little it repeats itself over and over again.
That's a funny like mindset people get in though, right? Like, 'cause that's like the part
Yeah.
of the plot of the Woody Allen film Midnight in Paris, right? 'Cause they go back to the
Yep.
20s and then those guys back there are like, "Oh, I wish we could live in whatever, the Belle Epoque," and then those people want to live
Yep.
somewhere and they keep going back and everybody's like, "Oh, it was cooler back before,"
It's
Yeah.
like the nostalgia for the past thing.
Yeah, nostalgia, and it's also, I don't think people do it intentionally, but it's like, I don't know,
Oh, I do it intentionally. Now that I'm a little older, I love telling people that because I'm 43 years old. So like I love telling people about what they missed and how cool it used to be. How cool
in.
the 90s were so cool.
I was going to say how it's like, I don't know, you go out skiing for a day and then the one run you don't do, and everybody else is going to be like, "Oh man, that was the run." Like, I don't know, people kind of like to make each other feel bad about things.
Yeah. Make people feel like they missed out.
Yeah, somehow, lift yourself up by putting others down.
It's a weird human thing.
I recently rewatched what is it, Slacker, the
Yeah.
Richard Linklater film, and the Austin looks pretty different in that than it looks now. It's to my eyes, and I've spent a decent
It
amount of time in
does.
Austin, so that and it feels different. I was never down there way back then,
Yeah.
but I guess the world was a little different. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I it's weird. I having been someone who grew up in Austin and have more or less spent most of my life, like I've spent stints of time in different places like LA, San Francisco, New York, Vermont. So I've spent time in other places, but Austin's always been kind of like home base for me.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where like probably 95% of the people that I grew up with in Austin or have moved away now, and
Yeah.
it is true, like the skyline even in town. Luckily I live in Travis Heights, which is one of the more historic kind of old school neighborhoods in town, but the skyline in downtown and even the older neighborhoods now, they're transformed. It's a different place than it used to be. It doesn't look the same. It
Yeah.
doesn't have the same vibe, doesn't have the same. I mean, there's still a very deep community here, and that's what I think makes it special still. But
Yeah.
I think it's been diluted a lot. Not saying what from, but
Yeah. A million things, a
it's
million
not
little
what once
things.
was.
It's probably more pronounced in a place like Austin that has such like a uniqueness and a specific like identity and history, but you see it kind of a little bit. Kind of wherever
Everywhere.
you go,
So you
things
mentioned,
definitely kind of have been trending like whatever more homogenized and whatever you want to call it.
exactly.
I was sorry, Trevor. I was gonna say, you mentioned New York, and I was on my run today. I was listening to Annie's House, your 2024 album.
It's cold is the night. Cold is the coldest night at the end of your street.
And I feel like you mentioned New York a lot on that record.
I do. I Annie's House was a it's a trip of a record for me because a lot of the songs were written prior to or leading up to 2021, which was when the actual record itself was recorded. And it had a very long, which is not typical for me, gestation period. Because I've always been a very like, I don't want to sit in the studio for a month. Let's go in, we'll record it in like 3 days. I wrote the songs over the past year. We'll get in, get out, record it, be done. And as a lot of people experienced, which I'm sure y'all had your own experiences with this, the pandemic really messed us all up in our way of dealing with anything or processing things, etc. And I'd recorded a bunch of these like different kind of more acoustic-y stuff when I was during the pandemic, really, and released kind of a series of EPs that led up to an album. And basically, when I was recording those EPs, I was listening back to a lot of these like demos I'd done from periods when I was in these different places like New York, etc. And more than I'd done in my past two releases, which were pretty much kind of like, again, like a rock and roll, let's get in the studio, drums, bass, guitar. We're not gonna rehearse anything before. I'm not gonna really tell them what we're doing. We're just gonna record a couple times and see how it goes. I was kind of starting to reflect on things more than I had. And it became I mean, Annie's House itself, I will say, was very it was the first time when a place had been really tied to my writing. In the case of like it being like whether it's like, I mean, it's metaphorical in the sense of like Annie's house being a place, but it was for someone I was like, oh, I'm gonna view this album as like a collection of almost like rooms that I'd experienced things in through my life, which is like the most pretentious thing I could possibly say. But that idea of like, if you think back, like David or Trevor, like if you think back on like your first breakup or like the like first time you were like in a tiny club listening to like a fucking amazing album, or when you're like, you know, stoned on the floor listening to like a vinyl, like these physical manifestations of these memories that like take you back. And it's funny because you see all these like TV shows now that'll like have the like filler episode where they like take you back to all these like memories of past places. I'm thinking of there's the new Black Mirror season had the thing where it was like a it was a bunch of like photos and it was extrapolating like what the place looked like from the photo. Anyway, I digress. The point is that Annie's house really was like that for me, and I didn't realize it honestly until after I came back to it when we were mixing and mastering in 2023, which was 2 years after we recorded. But I was just so obsessed with this idea, I guess, at the point of places and experiences, how that manifests as a memory of a space. And and New York was one of those places that I'd spent a lot of time, and you know, like there's some very direct references like Brooklyn. There's other kind of hidden references like Ohio State to places, Philadelphia, like a lot of that.
I don't think there's a more New York song on here than Philadelphia, which is about moving, maybe moving to Philadelphia, right? Or somebody maybe moving there because well, because it's cheaper. And then I think there's like some funny lines about that in there as some insults to that character that I maybe don't remember because I only listened to it once. But it's a very true New York thing. It's like, well, maybe, especially as a musician, I guess maybe you'll move to Philadelphia because you can afford it. And or I think what is she because she can afford to get off, I think might be
the 100%. We should move to
line.
Philadelphia.
We could move to Philadelphia. I heard it's still cheap enough to get you off.
And it was because my brother went to college. He My brother, he's my half brother on my dad's side, but we're super tight. And he spent time in a lot of places. He was born in New York, spent his first like 6 years or so in New York, and then moved from there to New Mexico, and from that to Berkeley, California, and then went back to New York for college, and then moved to LA, and then moved to Philadelphia. And he, like, all of his friends, because his whole friend group from high school when he was in Berkeley, because we would spend like mainly like summers together, but his whole friend group from high school basically moved to New York to go to college. And then like 90% of them have wound up in Philadelphia, because it's like he went to school for like creative writing. His whole friend group is in that kind of realm. And they were like, well, we can't live in like a one bedroom with four people for the rest of our lives.
No, yeah, I know. So we'll go to wish.com, New York.
Exactly.
But
The team you, New York.
yeah, but I do know plenty of musicians who've moved there and are very happy, and some of them have even done very well. So it's not crazy. It's not the craziest idea anyone ever had.
No.
So I think you kind of mentioned this, but the EPs, did those become there are only endings? Was that it? The 2023 album? Yeah.
So I kind of, so it's complicated. It was like fall of 2020, and I'd recorded the 1 year prior, so fall 2019, I'd recorded a couple of songs at Bubble Studio here in town with Frenchie Smith, who's a fantastic producer, produced Front Bottoms and a million other bands. Great dude. And I'd recorded it because I was part of a like an artist development program through something in Austin, and the whole point of that originally was they were like, we want you to record one single. We're gonna put the single on this compilation album of these like eight musicians, and it'll be this beautiful thing. And about a week before we were supposed to go into the studio, I called the director. It's Awesome Music Foundation. I called the director and I was like, "Hey, can I record six songs?" And he was like, "You know, we have one day, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it." And he was like, I mean, if sure. So we recorded like I think we did five songs in the end. And what that turned into was the St. Clair EP, which I went back and added piano and some other stuff too, in fall of 2020. And then I released that just on my own. Just put it out there because I was bored and it was a pandemic, and I was like, I'm not doing anything else, so I might as well just put out some music. And then I got the opportunity to go and hang out with a friend up in Vermont for a couple of months and recorded what would then be the Plainfield Tapes EP, which was I didn't really go up there with the intention of doing it, but I wound up kind of setting up a studio in this little barn in like Plainfield, Vermont, which is like population of like 70 people.
Yeah,
And it
that's
was
big for
perfect for
Vermont.
that time. It's huge for Vermont. Which, by the way, I did hear from your Alejandro episode saying that
Yeah,
there's no punk in Vermont yet.
is
There is some punk in Vermont.
that what we said? Oh yeah,
You did.
there's some. No, there's some.
There's pockets.
Yeah, I even briefly played some 20 years ago, but.
So I wound up being up there, and I brought a few mics, and I brought my J50, which is sitting over there. Because I was planning on writing, honestly, for what would become Annie's House, and I was like doing demos for that, and then I just started recording some ideas, and that's what became Plainfield Tapes, which was very different from anything I'd done before. Because again, like my Jake's and Jake's and Vornfields were both very like atmospheric punk rock, like indie rock kind of vibe thing. And then I was just doing like acoustic guitar with piano and vocals. And that was so different from what I'd done before, but it was so fun and it was something super different. So I came out of that summer with a full EP, which was Plainfield Tapes, and it was my first kind of experience fully Mexican mastering something myself as well. And then I released that, and I mean, like, I didn't do very much press around it. I didn't hire a press agent or do any of that stuff. I just kind of put it out there, and people seemed to respond to it. And then about 2 years later, I kind of pulled together the last scraps, remnants of what I would consider was probably like what I was really delving into at that point as a musician.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like acoustic, kind of open D tuning, kind of Nick Drake meets Elliot Smith thing, and recorded what would be Their Only Endings, which is realistically the length of an EP, but has like 10 songs.
count it.
So I consider it an album still.
It was
just me. I played drums on one song. I did all the acoustic guitar myself. One of my favorite dudes to play with, Cameron Riggs, who's speaking in New York, lives in New York now, played piano on it, and I set up a mic in a horrible location in his campus apartment here in Austin, next to an upright piano, and recorded some beautifully crappy piano.
Awesome.
And that was kind of the crowning jewel.
I would have written a lot of songs in C major if I was doing that. the D open D is a great tuning though. Do you do the whole thing in open D?
I did pretty much the whole thing in open D. I kind of had randomly fallen into the open D tuning.
Yeah.
Starting with drop D, and then I just gradually kept going down and found it. And it again, at that point, I was like realizing, oh my God, this was so much of the like old folk sound of like the finger picking kind of. And you don't know until you know or someone tells you.
Yeah, no, you've been trying to get that sound, but and you've been trying to get that sound out of a standard tuning, and then all of a sudden you change the tuning, and it's I learned open D from Rhett Miller. I ran into him at the Nashville airport, and I was talking about I had been writing a lot in open G, and he told me, he's like, I discovered this new open tuning, and he's like it's D A D F sharp A D. I don't know what it is. I was like, oh, I'll try that, and then I went home and tried. I'm like, that's a D. It was great.
That's just straight a D chord.
I mean, it is great though. I mean, like, story checks out. You put your guitar in it, it just sounds nice when you start messing around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a fun thing.
Those two albums, like, next to each other, it's a really cool contrast. And yeah, I love the piano sound too, that from that, you know, sort of clanky, whatever, and slightly out of tune. Like, that's. Have you ever heard the album Playing Piano for Dad by Beach Hunt? Yeah, it's got a little bit of that kind of vibe to it.
100%. Yeah.
I
think that's what I leaned into, is I didn't want it to sound perfect or like overly like recorded. I just was like, I wanted it, which was honestly a similar intention of Annie's House, but turned out in an entirely different way. I was like, I want this to sound like Towns Van Zandt sitting on his front porch playing songs for someone. Like, that's what I leaned into. It just was like, I can't, it's partially just because I can't stand typically recording in a studio normally.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour. That was actually a good place for the break though. Because we had just finished talking about a tuning, so why not take a break so we could change focus and talk about another tuning? Have you ever played in E E E E E B?
I have not. Tell me. Tell
I
me
did
about it.
I only did it once, and what I wrote wasn't any good. So I'm what I'm doing isn't any form of bragging. But it's the tuning that Stephen Stills used in Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And five of the strings are E's, but they're not all the same octave. And then there's a B. But like, it is fun to mess around it. But I think it's harder than, like, you know, we were saying D, you just, it makes you sound good right away. G's like that. Whatever the hell that Stills tuning is not easy.
It's one of those, I always think of like Nels Klein from Wilco or his Million Jazz Things doing slide work. And he'll do the thing where you don't, I'm holding a slide right now. but you don't line it up like perfectly with this fretboard, but you angle it a little bit so that you get a little bit of the dissonance between the notes.
Oh.
So if you're playing with two strings that are the same tuning, you angle it, it just adds that like slight, again, back to the like upright piano thing, the slight out of tune thing going on.
That might be really cool in that tuning, actually. I definitely didn't try playing slide in it.
There's
I was gonna say my tuning story is standard tuning, but my bandmate Shipley broke his high E string, and we wanted like a sort of a dobro type sound, and so he played lap slide on a five string standard tuning guitar. That became the Shipley sound. That was our like signature, and for the rest of the time we played, like, I think eventually he got the high E back on, and it just messed it all up. We had to take it off.
That's how you develop new sounds. I mean, Professor Longhair like developed his whole style of playing piano because he learned on a piano that was missing keys. He like invented a genre, you know.
Yeah.
Have you heard of G. Weller before?
No.
You guys gotta check this out.
Write it down.
G. Weller. So it's very unclear if this is real or not.
Okay.
But
it sounds up my alley from the start. Yeah.
If you know Fretboard Journal, they do a lot of stories on usually musicians like Bill Frisell, Julian Lage, all these like very classical jazz musicians. But there's this phenomenal guitarist who has been a session player forever. He used to work at Fretboard Journal. He plays a lot with Dijon now and all these other newer up and coming artists. One of the most killer guitarists I've heard, and Ryan Richter, and he did this story on April 1st, I think 2021.
Okay.
So it was April 1st.
Yeah.
But it's covering the mystery of G. Weller, which was an album that I think was released in 2020 or 2021 of these old, almost piratey songs that are insanely, like, one of the best solo acoustic guitar albums I have ever heard. Like, it's almost unbelievable. And there's an online theory, again, not to get too crazy about this, that it's likely Blake Mills of Lucinda Williams, etc., like a millionaire fame. But they go into this insane story about all of it. But the reason why I thought of it was they do an interview at one point in the story, which a lot of people think is Alfie from the band Bahamas actually giving the interview. But it's supposed to be G. Weller. And he is talking about the sound of the album. And he says that he broke his G string, so he replaced it with just a B string, because that's what he had laying around. Then he broke his D string, and replaced that with a B string as well. And so it's just like, it's like a E, A, not the tuning, but it would be like a E string, A string, B, B, B,
B. Yeah.
And for just like the fun of it, about a year ago, I was like, I'm just going to throw some B's on a crappy guitar I have laying around.
Yeah.
Honestly, sounded amazing.
Really?
Because it's something different.
Yeah,
and I think
that
like that's when you're like doing music for, you know, any period of time, all you're looking for is something new, like something to excite you a little bit.
Yeah.
And like those weird things you stumble upon like that, whether it's, you know, an April Fool's joke or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's a killer album, and I do actually think he used that tuning on it, because I've recreated a couple of things, and I'm like, oh, this sounds exactly like it.
I want to try that. I haven't heard this at all. I gotta listen to it. That is true, though. I mean, that's why I started playing open tunings in the first place, because, like, yeah, it just gives you something new. Like, and now that I've played too many open tunings, now I just, like, write on the piano, which I'm not very good at. But, like,
I do
it's
the
different.
Same thing.
Yeah.
I play. There was part of Annie's house where I was just writing on piano, because I was like, I don't know what this chord is, but
yep.
I know I'm not going to correct myself.
No, exactly. You go back to when you were younger and raw and just, like, taking stabs at the guitar, you know? So,
you're excited.
And then you do a mistake, but it's a good mistake, so then you go with it, you know? And that's
100%.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, I'm going to listen to, what is it, G. Weller? I wrote it down.
G. Weller.
I like that.
G. Weller.
Okay.
It's nice to have a little mystique.
Yeah.
In this day and age. It's like a digital bucket head of sorts.
Yeah, that's true. We know too much now. It's nice, actually, not to be sure about something.
Exactly.
And I will say it's a hell of a lot better than, have you guys encountered, I'm pretty sure they're just fake artists. They're like digital just creations. They start appearing across Spotify.
The whole Velvet Sundown thing, right?
Yeah, and it's like not people, right?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that
it
one.
Was so Velvet Sundown, I think they've now passed 1 million listeners on Spotify, and there's every single photo supposedly of them just looks like generic rock band from 70s mix of like Led Zeppelin meets Velvet Underground, etc. Most generic lyrics ever, and like it's real enough where you could be like, this could just be a bad band.
Yeah. We've all been on bills with them. Like, they're out there as well.
100%. But to see that finally permeate the music, like, to the point where it's like millions of listeners, it's insane.
That's wild. Yeah. I know.
I wonder if that's going to undermine our friend and special guest Matt Farley and his whole model.
His quantity model.
Quantity
I love his quantity approach, not quality. Or, well, I think, you know, the quality comes with the quantity, he would say, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of the same thing, though, right? Like, that's one is made by somebody, like, with care, and the other one's just like, people still want that. I think.
Yeah. You would hope so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe some of those folks live in downtown and those glassy condos listening to their Velvet Sundown, maybe they don't care, but
the glassy condos they built over what used to be Armadillo World headquarters, or
yeah,
or
exactly.
every city's got an equivalent, so, you know, just translate. Okay, I have a question that comes from my research, because I did do a little research, because podcasters have replaced journalists, so I have to do at least some. And so I logged on to Instagram and went to your page, William. And so I looked at who follows.
Oh, no.
I looked at who follows you that I follow, you know, tells you, like, and so I saw that you're followed by Hunt Sales, who's one of my favorite drummers. So do you know Hunt? Or, I mean, he lives in Austin, I think. I know that.
Yeah, we've known each other for years, from originally being on bills together. Again, my dad's part of the old kind of, I mean, the new Americana scene, but also the old punk scene in Austin, being part of the True Believers, etc. So he knew Hunt from back in the day, but Hunt and I also became friends, and Hunt played recently on an album that I produced for my dad, even this past spring. And Hunt is just one of the most rock and roll punk characters you could ever. He's one of those dudes that you're just like, you're straight out of the best rock and roll movie I've ever seen. He's just one of those dudes that is unreal in real life. And doesn't just fit the rock and roll like aesthetic of everything, but is just one of the best drummers
Yeah,
ever.
he's
Like,
like one, yeah,
it's.
short list of best rock drummers, and not even just rock, probably, but yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
his work with Bowie is insane. I mean, and everything he's done since then. And he did a residency for a while at the Continental Club, which is my home club in town.
Oh, yeah.
And he was just doing kind of the trio rock with marshals on stage and him hitting the hell out of the drums. And there's nothing like that. I mean, like, it's
Yeah.
just the raw old school punk rock, like real just music. It's dudes on stage
Yeah.
playing music together.
I just got into his solo record, which I had never heard, and that left from like, I don't know what, 7, 8 years ago. And it is so good. I love
It's
it.
really good.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
it's unexpected too.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, yeah, exactly. It's unexpected to be that good and have the songs are that good, the lyrics are that good. It's just, and it rocks from the second you turn it on. I've been like, I don't know how that album passed me by for so long, because I've been a huge fan of him as a drummer ever since I realized who the drummer on
Yeah.
Lust for Life is. You got it
Which is
there.
the one of the most iconic drum parts of all time. Like, it's
Yeah.
just gotta be like, he's just, he's like a spirit enigma, realistically. Like, he's just like one of those things that just kind of like floats in and out
Yeah.
and is
Yeah.
never quite real. He just kind of is an aberration that like just appears.
Yeah, exactly. That well said, because for a while earlier this season, we were talking about Fleetwood Mac a lot, and
Yeah.
he did an album with Bob Welch in the early
Yeah.
70s. So like he's even got a Fleetwood Mac connection. And it's like I forget what that album's called now, but it's great. I listened to it because I was going down a little hole, and I had never heard that one before. I was like, what else is there? What else did he do? But yeah.
Those are and just pounding the hell out of the drums too, right? I feel
Yeah.
like,
Oh,
yeah. I
so
mean,
good.
Mick always did that too. That was like, I don't know, something about just playing those things really hard.
Good
You create
joint.
something special. I mean, that's
Yeah.
what I mean. God, I can't even get started on Fleetwood Mac. You'll send me down a rabbit hole because
Oh, we've
I've
been
been
there. A
yeah, we've been
familiar
doing
rabbit
that all
hole.
season for some reason on a running podcast. We've been talking about Tusk all season long.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
So the marching band, and then like I can't. Yeah, I mean because I go all the way back to like the Buckingham Nicks album, which
Oh.
is I still think is one of my favorite albums before they were just overheard by the Fleetwood Mac crew and were like, oh, just join us, just do
Yeah,
this.
come and do this. Yeah, they just came out with a new like remastered version of that, like
Yeah.
just like this week, I think, or last
Wow.
week.
I just heard and I have not listened to it yet, but I was listening, I think I was just listening to like the local radio station and they were talking about how they just did a remastered version of that whole album, which is amazing that a whole new generation is gonna get to hear that. 'Cause that is an insane album and influences so much of how you perceive what would then be the Fleetwood Mac albums. Because of that, I mean, like Lindsey Buckingham learned all of his playing style is from watching banjo players on TV. Like that's why he plays the way he does, is just like that crazy picking style
He's
that
out
like
of control, yeah.
when he left the band, they replaced him with two people because no one can do what he
Yeah,
does.
that's a good point. I'm glad we
Yeah.
always get back to Fleetwood Mac this season for
Yeah, thanks for keeping us on track.
I don't know why,
I'm
but
bringing you back home.
yeah, exactly.
Oh, what we Before we forget, because we have forgotten every single time so far, but we did recently vow a couple things. There's a whole, I don't know, there was some thought that went into it, but we decided that for season six of our show, we're gonna have a target special guest, and the season will not end until we get this person on.
So this season could be 100, 200, yeah.
Yeah. And we considered various options, but we landed on Dave Rawlings. And
Damn.
then we said, we're going to ask all of our next special guests if they know not necessarily how to get to David, but maybe like somebody we should talk to. This is our live networking attempt.
Yeah, exactly. Where should we go next on the path? Where would you go?
Yeah, I'm trying to think because I feel like I know some connections to him, but I don't think any of them are direct at all. Because I feel like one of the paths I would have put you on would have been Alejandro Escovedo.
Yeah, well,
and the old punk rock days.
I
did consider just going back to
Alejandro. I was gonna say, yeah, I could ask him, and he probably just knows him. But that feels like cheating.
That feels like a little bit of cheating. Yeah.
I mean, is it cheating if I told you to, though?
No, probably not, actually. No. Yeah. But but that would it, but also for that to happen, Alejandro would have to respond to the text I sent him earlier today about Hunt sales.
he
has not responded to yet. So,
and
we'll
that's
see.
Why we love him.
Yeah, he'll remember. He'll remember after he listens to this episode.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's a whole other element of the whole punk thing. But that's the, I mean, that's like the ultimate boss of guests that you could have.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's, but not so impossible that like we might never get there. Right. Like,
but he has the, I mean, based on, again, conversation with y'all so far, and then what I listened to prior to the interview, it feels like that's like the it's right in the lane. What y'all are doing right now.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, we're just so honored that you chose to come on even after listening, which is
I thought about canceling.
Yeah, it depends which episodes you chose to listen to that would influence whether you'd want to come on or not. But
our world of special guests is quite interesting, because I don't think I had any idea of all these connections. Like, I think I noticed your dad played with Alejandro at some point, trying to just research a little bit more, but it was really some amount of our special guest outreach is just quite random. Like, I was literally just listening to Annie's House and was like, I wonder if this guy William, digging this music, wonder if he wants to come on the podcast. And I think it's just, you know, certain people respond, but we've got Bobby Daniel, yourself, Alejandro. We've got keyboardists from Houston. We got like a little cohort of LA-based musicians, and then
I think our keyboardists are usually from Denton, actually.
Denton, that's right.
Yeah,
more precise.
Honestly, weirdly specific. Yeah,
yeah.
Given Centromatic and the whole epicenter of that, I mean, I have, you can see right over there, I have a Centromatic poster up in my room.
Nice. Cool.
It's not a bad place for music to come out of.
Yeah, right. It's having a moment, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Will Johnson from Centromatic is one of my favorite musicians and songwriters overall. And now he's playing with Jason Isabel and doing the whole nine yards, which is amazing. But his work also going back to done so many things, but Jason Molina is the first one that comes to mind, also of like defining kind of early indie music.
Oh yeah.
But there's so much music is one of those weird things where there's just it's like a tighter version of like the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing.
Yeah.
It's like 2 degrees every direction.
Oh, everybody is super close. Yeah, exactly. It does not take far to get to anybody in music. Everybody's one step away. Even even when you're on the other side of the world, that happens.
Yeah,
100%.
This is how we'll find Rawlings eventually.
Well, he'll be like, I heard you guys are looking for me. And then we'll finally answer the question: does he run?
Yeah. Yeah, is that
I feel
question?
Like the answer has to be yes.
Right? I hope it is.
Yeah, you know, maintain that body. You know,
he's in too good a shape to not.
Right, he does. He's doing something good out there.
It could be something else, but I hope it's wrong. All right, I set an alarm to keep us from going too far over time as we would. So what should we end on, William? Is there anything you want to promote or any closing words or thoughts or anything important we forgot to ask you want to share with our listeners?
I'll have two things. The first is go listen to Annie's House, obviously.
Yes.
My album I released last year. I'll preview now that on the same label that I released Annie's House on, Strolling Bones, in the next year, I'm going to be releasing a new EP that I recorded. It's a little bit more upbeat than my previous work. So
Oh
maybe
man.
better for running,
Yeah,
honestly.
oh, okay, good. Yeah, some running music. The people have been asking for it.
It's got it's got some dancey 70s 80s beats in there,
Oh,
so
nice.
hopefully it's got a little of that push to it. The
Yeah.
last thing I'll ask you guys, because I do this annoyingly to every podcast I've been on, is
Yeah.
turn the tables a little bit.
Okay.
Ooh,
And
I'm
I like
curious what made y'all start this podcast and this kind of merge of running and art and music and punk rock and all the things that embody it. What drove y'all to do this? 'Cause I'm curious, and it's something I didn't hear, at least in the episodes I listened to.
Sure.
That's a great question. Well, one thing is around when we turned 40, we both just kind of got way more into running.
Yeah.
And so like we had a college radio show together. We graduated college, 21 years ago. And so we had a, a radio show back in college, and we were in a band back then, and we got really into running. And I was telling an old friend of ours from college, and she said something like offhanded, like an offhand remark that, oh, she'd be interested to hear what we talked about when we talked about running, or like, or it'd be cool if we had a podcast. And we were like, all right, well, let's just do it.
I love it.
And the other thing
Sweet.
that, but that did get me, part of the reason I got way more into running, I was already getting into it, but then I saw Alejandro, my old band was opening for his band in Brooklyn somewhere, and we were
Yeah.
talking before the show, and he asked me if I would run a marathon with him. So
Dang
I said yes, but then I'd never run a marathon, and I realized I didn't want to like conk out like halfway through. So I started to train for another one before the one with him. And so I ran my first marathon, and then the one that he and I were gonna do together never happened. I've
Yeah.
run three, and I'm like probably gonna do a fourth one this year. So
Okay, your turn now, Trevor. I'm sorry
no,
to put you on the spot, but this is my
it's
thing.
I'd only add, I mean Dave summed it up nicely. I'd only add that we had the idea, and we kept kind of talking about it and being like, well, should we really do this? Should we do it? And then we had dinner at a place in New York called the Ear Inn,
Oh
very
yeah,
old
great.
establishment,
Yeah, great old bar. Yeah.
and we're like, all right, well, if we're gonna do it, what are we gonna talk about? And we're like, so our one topic that we landed on was Strummer's London Marathon, and we're
Yeah.
like, that's a topic. That's a good intersection of what we're that's sort of like where we wanted to be with the podcast.
Yeah.
And I guess slightly like not taking ourselves too seriously and all that, being okay like with that aspect. And then we were like, all right, well, let's see if we can get some guests. And I think that what really took off early was some amazing people like agreed to come on for absolutely reasons unbeknownst to us, this like no name podcast. And I think our first like big score was probably Tom Bosworth, who
Yeah.
holds the world record for the fastest walking mile. And we like were talking about, oh, I wonder if, the fastest walking mile could beat our running miles. And we're like, almost certainly. And then we like looked it up and we're like, oh, this guy Bosworth did it by a lot. Like,
Yeah, it can. It beats our
yeah, it
beats my running
can.
mile, yeah.
Let's get him on. And what I feel like that kind of really emboldened us to like start, we're like, oh, well, if you tell people you got a podcast, sometimes they agree to come on. And we just ended up with world-class musicians and runners and just a really interesting cross-section of people that,
Yeah, exactly. It,
fit into this weird little world. So,
yeah, runners, musicians, people have started cool organizations, also just all
yeah.
whoever we felt like. So yeah, it's been pretty cool.
Amazing. Well, I'm glad y'all are doing this. It's something different and something new, which I think is in the modern day something we need is different voices and different experiences. So again, thank y'all for having me on
Yeah.
and hearing my ramblings and everyone else's. But I mean, that's what means something these days, right? Is an eclectic mix of everything.
Yeah, definitely. No, thank you for coming on. And we'll check in with you down the road because we check in with all our special guests. Once they don't necessarily realize it, but once you've come on this show, you're a special guest forever. So you'll hear
Yeah.
from us again.
Immortalized.
Yes, yes. All right, William, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks,
Thank you
man.
so much for having me.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
Thank you so much, William, for coming on. That was really awesome. That was a lot of fun to have that chat.
Yes, thank you, William. That was super cool. Our world of special guests, even as it gets a little bit bigger, in some ways it also just, feels a little bit, that much smaller. It's
Yeah.
just a small world here on the Power Bush Picnic Hour.
Yeah, I think Paul Simon said it best, right? He said if I could have all the podcast guests from the Power Motion Picnic Hour and get them in one room for just one night. He said something like that.
Yeah. I'm not sure which song you're referring to, but
Yeah, I was quoting it pretty poorly, but it was Kodachrome.
oh
If he could get all the girls he knew when he was single and get them all together for one night.
yeah. Oh, you took a lot of liberties.
Yeah, it didn't work out as well out loud as it did in my head when I was like, this will be a funny thing to say that everyone will understand. Yeah, everyone will get my reference to a song no one really knows the lyrics to anyway.
Yeah, there goes Rhymin' Simon.
There. That's the album title. See, I get your reference, but that's because your reference was clear. And mine didn't make sense.
Yeah, well,
What are you
take
gonna
take
do?
take take a lot of shots,
Yeah. It's okay. That's the kind of shot you could take 50 minutes into a podcast episode. And if people are still listening, they're cool with it. Then if you're in that safe space where you're allowed to,
Take your shot.
Yeah.
I have a I guess a returning segment that we haven't done in a while.
Okay.
But I backed by popular demand this week, Bird of the Week.
Oh, let's do it. The classic. I love Bird of the Week. Cue the chirping sounds.
All right. So this is also a running achievement. It's in that category as well. So just so everybody knows, the semi-palmated sandpiper will fly the human equivalent of 126 marathons in a row.
Whoa. That's even.
They measured the distance of the migration by marathons, 126 of
I don't even think Katie Shag could do
them. Not yet.
Yeah, exactly. Something to work for, though. Something,
Yeah.
a good keep striving.
Yeah. So, there you have it. Semi-palmated sandpiper.
Thank you. Cue more bird sounds. I'm talking to myself in the future. This is like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure at the end. I assume we've all seen that.
And since it's a nice segue, I guess I've got a quick race roundup.
Let's do it. Cue the bird chirping.
So a lot of special guests out there running races over the last several weeks. Katie Scheid, first special guest to cross the finish line at the Hard Rock.
Nice.
Also first place finish and course record.
Wow. Congratulations. That's amazing.
And also a shout out to the men's winner,
Oh.
Ludo Pommeret, not yet a special guest.
Future guest.
But he was deeply fortissimo when he ran the race. In fact, he is now, at the time of recording, a fivetissimo.
Five tissimo. I like how that we've changed the meaning of the word fortissimo, which used to mean it used to just mean almost 41.
Well, this is yeah, I'm just kind of riffing here. I don't know that we've this is something new I'm trying out. I'm not sure fivetissimo has been accepted yet, but you know what I mean. He just turned 50. He
He
ran the
was
race at 49.
at 49isimo. If my Italian serves me right. Yeah, if my recollection of Italian class in high school.
Well, I think that's about all we got on the Hard Rock report. But special guest Jeff Colt won the High Lonesome 100.
Congratulations, Jeff.
And special guest Cole Crosby win and course record at the Vermont 100K.
Wow. What a week. We salute you with a patented double tweet. I don't know why I'm giving myself all this work to edit in bird sounds.
Hopefully you find a good just like cache of bird sounds to draw from.
Isn't there an AI I can download that'll just, you can tell it to edit in bird sounds at the appropriate moment?
You could definitely get the Merlin bird ID app, and I think if you look up a bird, you can probably get the bird sound.
Yeah, but I mean like something I can hook up that'll just put bird sounds into this podcast at the appropriate moments.
I mean, I think the technology is possible.
Yeah, it's sure. We're so close.
I don't know. Don't know if it yet exists, but I think we've got all the component parts that it is like possible. It is theoretically possible to have that.
Yeah, I looked up some blogger's recap of a robotics conference and all the hot new items coming out. Yeah. And none of them look fast except the dog robots. And those look terrifyingly fast.
Oh, man. I don't think I'd want to be chased by a dog robot.
No, they look like the things that, what's that company? Boston Robotics? Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
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 Those guys are terrifying. All the other robots are very cute and very slow looking. All right, let's see. What else we got? What other segments? My week in running was I ran 14 miles on a treadmill 2 days ago.
Nice. That's a healthy treadmill run.
Some people hate doing that. I could run on a treadmill forever. I feel like I could run a I think I could run a marathon on a treadmill with minimal training, and I'd be fine with it.
Get like a nice setup. You're comfortable there. You got, you know, your soccer on sometimes.
There was soccer on, exactly. Yeah. I was for 2 hours. I didn't even know. I 2 hours of ignoring whatever I was listening to focus on the friendly from the Premier League.
I feel like watching soccer or even golf, or like those feel like good, or like Formula One. I don't know, some like long event that kind of just.
The only, I don't know, the only sport that keeps my attention now is either soccer or banana ball.
Banana ball.
Yeah, yeah. Do you watch banana ball?
I haven't seen this, no.
Well, it's baseball, but it's baseball according to Savannah Bananas rules.
Interesting.
Which is, okay. They're a barnstorming team out of Savannah, Georgia. Anyway, banana ball is great. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah. Fun for the whole family. You should bring all the young apprentices to a banana ball game if you can get tickets. They just did Fenway Park recently.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's like a big, okay. I have no idea what you're talking about still, but.
They all sell out. It's, yeah, you'd love it.
Look it up. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, they sold out Fenway Park. It's a big deal.
Well.
On that note, that's probably enough. So we got some clues for how to find Dave Rawlings.
I think the clue was talk to Alejandro.
Yeah, so we're going to try to look for another clue then, I guess. And that feels like cheating. That feels like, you ever have Game Genie for Sega Genesis?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, it's like if you were a kid and you just gave Alejandro the control. That's cheating.
Yeah.
So we'll try to keep, you know, rolling down the golden road to unlimited devotion.
As we get our first lead and summarily dismiss it, we move on.
Yeah.
The journey.
It's just what feels right. So yep. We'll pick it up next time. We'll unload the mailbag. So please keep writing into that. It's getting, the mailbag is overflowing actually with submissions, but please keep writing in. And maybe next week or the week after, we'll finally try to empty it. And we'll just do a rapid fire mailbag episode.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. I'm excited for it. This was great. And yeah, all that's left to say is until next time.
Onward.
Special guest,
William Harry's Graham.
This is the Power Mode.